This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. The plot to kill pensions and a plan to save them. A crisis is brewing for older American workers in retirement due to an attack on pensions and the inadequacy of 401k accounts, which were designed to replace guaranteed pensions.
In response, Professor Giladucci is proposing a comprehensive system of reform called the Guaranteed Retirement Account, and she also wants improvements in Social Security.
Hello.
If we could just start with a summary. In December, Congress passed and the president signed into law the 2015 Omnibus Spending Bill. And that includes a whole number of provisions that allow trustees of certain multi-employer plans to cut retirees' pensions. Perhaps we can just begin there with some summary of what these provisions are.
Sure. The multi-employer plans are joint union and management pension plans. Also, unions and management often negotiate health care plans as well. But the multi-employer union management plans happen in industries where the union is dominant and there's a lot of employers that the workers will move to in their career. So we have janitors, we have trucking industry, warehouse industry, miners, coal miners, gold miners, other kinds of miners are often in these multi-employer plans. They're middle class and lower middle class occupations that have been greatly improved because they've been unionized and there's a collectively bargained contract. The problem is, in the past 20 years, unions have gotten weaker and weaker, and they have not been able to organize some of the big players in certain industries. So let's take, for example, the Teamsters multi-employer plans, where they had big trucking companies were part of their multi-employer plan, and new trucking companies have developed who aren't unionized. So the old unionized employers and the union were trying to hold these multi-employer plans together. And over 20 years, with no new members coming in and more older members retiring, those plans got out of balance. So what Congress did in December is to say, okay, for some of these union plans that are in really bad shape, they have to be in what's called red zone status, meaning they're underfunded and there's really no hope of new employees coming in or the employers contributing more to these pensions, that in those special cases, the benefits to current retirees can be cut. So there's bad news and there's good news in that legislation. The very bad news is that for the first time under pension law, for traditional pensions, the employer or the plan can cut benefits to current retirees. The private sector was protected under the Employment Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA, and that could never happen. Of course, it's happening in the public sector, and of course, it happens all the time to people with 401ks, but in the traditional defined benefit plan, that could never happen. So what Congress did was to say it can be cut for current retirees. That's the bad news. The good news is that it might keep these plans alive so that people who are about nearing retirement can at least get something from those plans. So there's a mixed message, a mixed effect of December's actions. Of course, it's part of a whole other landscape that doesn't have much good news in it.
Do you think that this was a thought through proposal, or was attached to a spending bill that there were no real congressional hearings on it? There's a lot of criticism over this.
Great question. This was actually a provision that has been well thought out. There was a blue ribbon report on what to do about these plans that were going bankrupt. These are plans in the construction industry and in the trucking industry. Teamsters and a lot of construction trades, plumbers, bricklayers, a lot of different kinds of unions are involved. So for 2-3 years, that community has known that some of these plans were going into bankruptcy. So they, I actually testified in hearings about the same kinds of proposals about a year and a half ago. There is, though, a lot of controversy. This is the first time that private sector law was amended so that you could cut benefits for very vulnerable people, people who are already retired or, you know, could face a 5, 10, in some cases even a 20% cut in their benefits.
And how does UPS fit in this? They withdrew from that a while back, but they're somehow back in the mix here.
Yeah, so UPS was a part of the plan that is in great trouble. A Teamsters plan called the Central States plan, Teamsters plan, and the UPS used to be one of the big trucking companies, or basically a trucking company, communications company, attached to that plan. And for years, they've been wanting to withdraw from that plan. About 10 years ago, a big trucking company called Consolidated Freightways went bankrupt. So the company was gone, but all of their retirees were still in the plan. So UPS had been itching to get out for a long time. There was a big strike in 98 over this issue. So it's been brewing for a long time. So UPS, though, is free from the plan, and they have their own traditional plan. But it is all part of the same story, that more and more trucking companies have come online who aren't unionized and aren't contributing to that plan.
I want to go back a little bit. And so many younger workers do not understand the significance of pensions. And I keep thinking, oh, my goodness, without pensions, without Social Security, we are a hop step away from the workhouses. But within that, I wonder if you can talk a little bit and just reinforce the significance of the retirement, the American retirement income policy, what it did, what its significance was, what Social Security and the federal tax subsidies were about, so that we can really give some sense of what the jeopardy is for the American working class.
Yeah, I do share your concern. Let me start really from the beginning. And that was a couple of years before Social Security was passed in 1935. We had a big recession, and we had many elders who were facing dire poverty. These are people who couldn't work any longer, or who had never been in the workforce, and their poverty rates were, 1 out of 2, 50%. Their families were splitting up. They were moving to cities. They no longer could families take care of the elders. Elders were moving into houses that, facilities that were designed for the mentally ill, and other kind of county poor houses. And there was a great movement started in California to give $100 a month to retirees, to anybody over 65. It was called the Townsend Movement. So it was a big radical movement that was sweeping the country. Many politicians who endorsed the plan, the Townsend plan, were winning. And the idea was that people who are old after a lifetime of work deserved a guaranteed income. The compromise program was the Social Security system, which actually basically agreed with that sentiment, that anybody who did work for their whole life deserves some insurance against not being able to work, either because of old age or because of disability. So 1935, we passed the Social Security Act. It's not welfare. It's based on contributions on earnings. Everybody to this day in America who works in a regular, who works in actually lots of jobs, has to pay the Social Security tax. It's called FICA. And what that is an insurance premium. It's not really a tax. And it doesn't go into general revenue. It goes into the program. And what it does is entitle the person who pays that tax to get a benefit if they get too old, if they die and leave survivors, or they're disabled. Now, that program became the basis for a retirement entitlement to all workers, not just the rich. The idea is that you could have Social Security as a base, and on top of that, get a pension from work, save for retirement, but that Social Security would be your base of support. And what that's done, and it's a remarkable American social policy achievement, it's a remarkable achievement, is that the rich, middle class, and the poor alike who work are entitled to some kind of end-of-life leisure or retirement. And that's really ingrained in our system of what a good life is. And not a basic life, is that you could actually retire at the end of your working life. I emphasize that point because it's that entitlement, that legitimacy, that we are poised to lose with past pension reform, the 401k system, and some of the things that are being telescoped in Congress, like raising the retirement age. So to answer your question, right now we have a system that has the base of the system is Social Security. On top of it is savings and some pensions. But what it upholds is the idea that everybody who works for a lifetime can retire at the end of their working life.
Now, the traditional pension plans have been under decline, I think mostly because of de-employer offensive and de-unionization, especially since 1979. There may be some other factors, and if there are some, I wish you'd tell us. But a lot of people around that same time said, well, we don't need them. We can have 401k plans, and this will be much better. But you disagree.
Oh, no, you said that quite succinctly. So let me repeat. The defined benefit plan never covered everybody. About 50 to 60% of the labor force around 1980s had a traditional pension plan, and almost everybody in government employment has a traditional pension plan. And what it does is the employee pays, either directly or indirectly, and to an entitlement at the end of their working life, around 65 or a little bit earlier, to an annuity for the rest of their life. Nobody ever got rich on a defined benefit plan, but it kept people with Social Security at their standard of living that they achieve when they were working, or above the poverty line, but it provided a guaranteed pension for life. Let me just talk to the people who are listening to your radio program who might be under 40 or 50 because they have parents, and if they're listening to your radio program, they probably have parents who worked on their lives. They're more likely to have parents with a traditional pension plan, and every younger person, an adult child, knows that if their parent in old age is taken care of, that actually alleviates a lot of burden on a working family's life if you don't have to take care of your older parents. So right now we have a generation of middle-aged workers whose parents are probably covered by those traditional plans. But what happened in the 1980s is that a new provision that was developed for management employees called the 401k, and it's just a section of the tax code. You know, mind you, Social Security has this grandiose name, Social Security, because it was meant to achieve a great social purpose, to give security to all workers' lives. 401k was never intended to meet any social purpose. That's why it's called something after a tax code, you know, a little provision of the tax code. It was really a way for management and high-income workers to save pre-tax to top up their retirement because they weren't included in the traditional plan of the rank-and-file workers. It's by accident that that kind of a plan, that deferred earnings, became a major retirement plan or sold to workers by employers as a retirement plan. And as more and more employers adopted the 401k supplement, they either cut back or eliminated their traditional plan. And much of it was due to the weakness of unions, but also a chronically high levels of unemployment that just made workers less able to bargain either individually or collectively for a good pension plan.
But why are the 401k plans so inferior to traditional pensions?
Yeah, there's three reasons why the 401k plan is a failed experiment. It was an experiment with how people could save for their retirement that we've conducted over the past 30 years, and it fails on three counts. First of all, they're voluntary. So the idea is that an employee has to decide whether or not they're going to save for their retirement that could be 30 to 40 years in the future. And those kinds of planning is very hard for people who suffer divorces, unemployment, or needs in their family. It's just very difficult to ask someone to save voluntarily for such a long time purpose. The only successful pension plans on the planet and in this country have been ones where workers don't have a choice. You're in the plan, you're in Social Security, or you're not. You just have to save. So they're voluntary. That means that most people don't save enough. They're also voluntary on the part of the employer. Over half of American employers don't have a 401k. They don't have to have one in order to attract and retain the workers they want to attract. The second way they fail is that the worker is required to decide what kind of portfolio, what kind of investments to have. And workers, for the most of us, we're not trained to be professional investors. And also the employer chooses the investment vehicles for us. So the employer goes out, the employer often is not qualified, gives you a whole list of choices in your 401k plans, hardly understands how they work with each other or even how much they cost, gives that list to their employees, and the employees are supposed to choose. Research study over research study shows that the list is inappropriate and that workers do not have the optimal portfolio. And the fees are three or four times what they would be under a defined benefit plan. And the third way they fail is that if a person has done everything right, saved their whole life, invested correctly, at the end of their life, there is no way that they can conveniently or economically convert a lump sum into a lifelong guaranteed annuity. And I haven't even added that the stock market might crash right before you retire. And there's no way a worker or an employee can protect themselves against that kind of a risk. So they just fail on all three counts. And no other country watching the American system has ever adopted anything like it.
Teresa, talk about the guaranteed retirement accounts, that plan that you see as beneficial, and how it corrects the failures, some of which you have mentioned, of the current system.
Right. Oh, thank you. So the guaranteed retirement account is a retirement account for all American workers, and it is very similar to what privileged American workers have. People in public employment, people in teaching, people who live, who work for big corporations. It's like a traditional pension plan, but it doesn't depend upon just one employer. So the guaranteed retirement account sits on top of a strong Social Security system, and it requires workers to save for their own retirement into an account that is professionally managed, and the account balance has a portion that's guaranteed, and the other portion can vary according to what the financial markets do. So there's an upside to the guaranteed retirement account, but there's a portion, the principal is guaranteed. I proposed that we have a guaranteed retirement account on a national basis back in 2008, but Congress never moved. So 17 states are adopting a hybrid system in their state. California was the first state to move, and they're about ready to have a mandate that all employees be put into a pension plan that would be professionally managed, so that you get the benefits of a pooled assets and professional managers. So people should be getting about a guaranteed rate of return of 3%. Now, 3% doesn't knock anybody's socks off, but it's a positive number, whereas people who were saving in their 401k plans actually lost 25%, you know, back in 2008. So it's a guaranteed number. So it's really simple. It's a mandated universal plan that sits on top of Social Security. It's advanced funded, and it's professionally managed for low fees. And at the end of your working life, when you start collecting Social Security, the guaranteed retirement account is paid on top of that. You get a boost to your Social Security. Another way you can call it or think of it is a Social Security Plus. Yet it sits on top of Social Security and gives you a lifetime of benefits.
For years, people have been saying that Social Security was going to go bust, but we're not hearing that much about that anymore.
Yeah.
But people are still criticizing Social Security. Is there a way to improve Social Security?
Yeah, I recommend that everybody watch the legislation that Senator Warren is sponsoring in the Senate. She's now in the minority, but the legislation is still out there. So there, and I'm also on a bipartisan commission. We have Republicans and Democrats on that commission. And we're going to come out with proposals in May to strengthen Social Security. So let me tell you the way that we've that many of us are circling around a proposal to strengthen Social Security. First and foremost, we have to make sure that it has enough projected money to pay current benefits. So you have to bring in more revenue. The best way to do that, and everybody agrees, I'm not controversial here, is to raise the earnings cap. Right now, workers pay up to $117,000 per year. Now, most workers don't make anywhere near $117,000 per year. About 85% of earnings are from workers who make less than that. But there's a good 10% of workers who make over $117,000 a year. The proposal is to eliminate that cap, make workers who are in the higher end of the earnings scale pay their Social Security tax no matter how much they make, you know, all year round. And that brings in enough revenue to basically put the system into balance to keep the benefits where they are. There's some other proposals to actually increase the tax rate a little bit. Right now, we each pay 6.4%, which is actually quite low for international standards. The employer and the employee pay 6.4%. There's proposals to actually raise that tax rate a little bit more, and then you could start boosting benefits, which I propose is a good thing to do, so that people who are on Social Security will have enough income to be above the poverty level, especially if you're over 80. So the way to strengthen Social Security is to bring more revenue into the system. Two ways to do that: raise the earnings limit and raise the payroll tax a bit.
I know people are going to want to learn more about this. So if you want to give us your web page, your blog page,
so
people can follow.
Yeah, I write all the time. It's just my name, Teresa.Gallarducci. .org. That's what it is. That's just my name.
And we can also say that the Economic Policy Institute has a briefing paper, Guaranteed Retirement Accounts Toward Retirement Income Security, which is extremely informative.
Oh, good. Good. Yes. Yes.
See, I had to inform you of that. You had no idea.
Yes, I forgot about that. Of course, it's my paper. And the Economic Policy Institute is a really good place to get all sorts of economic news, including news about Social Security as well.
Just in 30 seconds, any likelihood that guaranteed retirement accounts would be taken up by, Congress that is soon to...
Not this Congress. But I predict that some Congress very soon will take it up. And that's because social policy in this country is made by the states acting first. When Congress won't raise a minimum wage, 25 states will raise a minimum wage. And as we see a version of the guaranteed retirement accounts sort of sweep across the country state by state, pretty soon it's going to make more sense for everybody just to make it a national program. That happened with Social Security and also happened with unemployment insurance.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being on the program. We've been talking to Teresa Giladucci, Professor of Economic Policy Analysis at the New School for Social Research.
And let's make sure we, as we finish our work lives, have a way to sustain ourselves in the society. And thank you for your input to that process.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.